Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hello, naughty monkeys out there. Guess what? Today we're going to be talking about penises. So if you have one.
I have that.
You have that.
I have that.
You do.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
But I.
There must be a penis in your life.
There is a penis in my life and many friends with penises in my life. And so if you listening are either a lover, a friend to a penis, or got your own penis, just call your own.
I like the idea of being a friend to a penis and not a lover of it.
How about a friend and a lover?
Yeah, sure. It can be both.
Oh, but so this is I've been looking forward to doing this episode for a long time. And because there's so much that we don't know about our own goods. So in studio, we have Dr. Dudley Danoff. Hello, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And
can we call this the penis hour?
I want to call it the penis power hour.
All right, there you go.
Call it hard times.
Yes.
Penis power hour. We'll change the name of the podcast to that.
That's the name of his book, Penis Power.
No, I know.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this episode will be called Penis Power or something. Can we say penis on iTunes? Okay.
It would be weird if you couldn't say penis on
iTunes. Yeah, isn't that a shame that in the 21st century you have to think about whether you can say the word penis.
Yeah.
Pejorative. Yeah. Penis is to the urologist what the stomach is to the gastroenterologist.
Totally.
And I start every interview, it's not a pejorative word, get over it. I mean, it's so absurd. And that's one of the reasons why I titled the book. I'm a mainstream urologist. I'm not some sex fiend, some weirdo. The mainstream press, tough time with putting the word penis on the cover of a book. I mean, totally. It's hard to believe in the 21st century.
Just tell us being a penis about it. You know
that's
what I mean?
Right. Or maybe a dickhead.
Yeah, cocksucker.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, that either also shouldn't be a pejorative, in my opinion. But
right.
We could talk about slang terms another time.
Oh, yeah. God. I have some favorites.
The slang hour.
I would love to ask you, just first off, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell us, like, what is a urologist? Because people will ask their primary doctor sometimes and never go as far as asking for a urologist when they have certain genital issues. So please share.
Well, the most important thing about me is I was born in Brooklyn. And then I went to Princeton as an undergraduate in Yale Medical School. And then I had my surgical training at Columbia Presbyterian in New York. And then came out here many, many, many years ago, early 70s. And I established my practice at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. And I've been on the faculty at UCLA. A urologist is basically a human plumber. So we're in charge of all things in the waterworks. Kidney, bladder, prostate cancer, erectile dysfunction, testicles, testicular tumors, but cancer of the bladder, infection. So anything that has to do with the urinary system, men and women, mm-hmm. Except in women, we're not gynecologists, but they have kidneys and bladders and transplants. And I wrote the book because I wanted to write a populist book that was easier to understand, that was funny, that was informative, and somebody gave me the idea of penis power, and I thought it was a great title for a book, and that's the way it started.
Awesome. Well, I love the little there's like little penis illustrations.
Yeah,
like
those are clever.
He's working out, he's eating some food, he's, you know,
well, we call those penis personalities. We saw a man, you know, is the same in the bedroom as he is in the boardroom.
Oh, yeah, there is an anthropomorphic penis illustrated throughout this book.
Wow. So, yeah, the idea there, you know, if you're a jerk in the bedroom, you're a jerk in the boardroom, and if you're pernicious or persnickety or perceptive or... So we use a lot of P words. We have negative penis personalities and positive ones, and we have this little cartoon figure that sort of fits it. They're very, very funny.
Oh, man. I want to see this dancing across a football field. You know what I mean?
There you go.
So I actually just... Okay, first of all, let's start off with something really nerdy that I just want to get out of the way because I have a question, an anatomy question, because then I really want to hit erectile strength and... Whoa, Dave is smirking
nothing.
At me.
Yeah.
Erection strength and premature ejaculation, or what people will call premature. Okay. Guys get turned on. They start having sex. Eventually, their body starts preparing for ejaculation. Okay? And I was reading your anatomy section of your book. And so, okay, at some point, the sperm will leave the testes, go around, and hang out in the seminal vesicles, right? There they collect fluid, then they collect fluid at the prostate, and then eventually ejaculate out. Okay, that's a general like thing. What is the time frame? Like, how long? Like, what is going on where your sperm leaving your testes to hang out in the seminal vesicles, and then suddenly, like, boom, fluid, boom, I'm ejaculating. What is that time?
Well, I mean, it's a very long time. So when you start making love, I mean, this process doesn't happen. What happens is seminal fluid, which is mostly prostatic fluid, very little of it is sperm, is in the seminal vesicles. It's kind of waiting there. It's kind of a reservoir. It's like a little rabbit ear sticking up from the prostate. So when you start to have sex and you're excited, you reach this point of inevitability. And when you ejaculate, it's really a reflex. Now, there's lots of things that retard ejaculation. I mean, one of them is age. Mm-hmm. One of them is alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. One of them is frequency of intercourse. So the more frequently you have intercourse, the longer the refractory period, the longer it takes you to ejaculate. Mm-hmm. The less frequently you have intercourse, you haven't seen your girlfriend, your wife, your lover. You know, in 2 weeks, zam, wham, bang, hardly get your zipper down and it's over and done with. So there's a lot of factors that affect ejaculatory quickness, the volume of the ejaculate, the so-called forcefulness of the ejaculate, the intensity of the ejaculation.
Okay, that's important to note. But literally, when does the sperm start leaving the testes? Right, I mean, with... Does it start like trickling over to the seminal vesicles? Because it's kind of a long path if you look at the charts.
Well, it's a constant process. So your testicles 24/7 are making sperm, and the sperm make this journey through what's called the vas deferens, this little tube, to the storage area. So that's going on constantly. And seminal fluid, which is made by the prostate, which is the carrying fluid that mostly makes up what we call the semen, you know, that's being made constantly. But what happens in the storage area is it begins to accumulate. And if a man doesn't ejaculate, either by masturbating or having sex with somebody, he's going to have the so-called wet dream. It's going to be a spontaneous emission, because when the seminal vesicles get really, really, really full and distended, boom, reflex ejaculation. So this process is a constant process.
Okay, I think that's when I do my reading. I never read about a storage place in the body. I always read about the testes being the storage place. So I think of...
It's not the testes. The testes are just, you know, making a little sperm. And if you look at the volume of an ejaculate, let's say it's 2 cc's, 3 cc's, you know, really 4 cc's, a well-rested prostate, you know, you could put the number of sperm on the head of a pin. It makes up almost no volume whatsoever in the ejaculate. Most of that is seminal fluid.
I am turned on.
There you go. You don't want to get too technical here. Kiss me, you fool.
No, okay, that's really helpful. I didn't realize that the sperm were just like kind of like trickling over to the seminal vesicles all day long.
All day long.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I also didn't realize that the volume of sperm was so small.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, so you can get 100 million sperm, you know, on absolutely the head of a pin.
So is there just like a certain amount of seminal fluid that just like hangs out in our body, or is it like?
I don't think you can ever really empty the seminal vesicle, which is this little storage tank of seminal fluid. I don't think
it's just constantly refilling.
Yeah, always.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you go without having sex for a long time, and then you have sex, you're going to have a volume of ejaculate which is high. So the volume of the ejaculate is inversely proportional to the frequency with which you ejaculate.
Sure.
It's also inversely proportional to age. So, what a guy did all night long, when he gets really old, it takes him all night long to do. So the old joke.
So are blue balls. Oh.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is that a real thing? Some people say that's a myth.
It's a myth.
Is it really?
Yeah. The girls love it. Oh, I have blue balls. Please, you have to help me out. There's no such thing. I mean, it can be that you have this sensation that your seminal vesicles are really full, and you have this kind of full sensation in the perineum. Perineum is that space between your rectum and the base of your scrotum.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, the taint.
But yeah, the taint. Yeah. Right, exactly. But there's no such thing. I mean, your balls don't turn blue.
I mean, oh, sure. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a partner or partners, but I remember one specifically that was like, oh my God, it feels like I'm bruised. Like I'm literally.
Yeah,
so
it's happened
right
to me
now.
And it's like really, really hurt.
Yeah.
Well, it's this feeling of fullness, usually, a denied seminal vesicle.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's no such entity as blue balls.
I had no idea the seminal vesicles were. I'm sorry. I have a stuffed prostate, like a cute little plushy prostate from this company that makes like internal organ stuffed animals. And it's just like this adorable little green prostate with these little wings on its head.
Yeah, that's
like,
the seminal vesicle.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I didn't realize how. I mean, I knew that the sperm passed through and like collected. I had no idea that they were that important.
Yeah. I mean, the prostate actually.
Yeah, where is the seminal vesicle?
It's sort of like rabbit ears on the prostate. The prostate is actually very solid. The seminal vesicles are like two little empty balloons, you know, like little sausage casings that kind of fill up and contract. But
and all that's kind of underneath and behind the bladder. So
right. So I mean, it's not in a. I mean, unfortunately, the way the prostate is examined is what the DRE called the digital rectal exam. It's not some new age. This is the digit. So you put a gloved finger on, and if you examine the prostate, the seminal vesicles at the very, very top of the prostate, sort of at the very tip of your finger if you have a very long finger.
So, it's hard to get in there sometimes.
That's hilarious that that's the name for that. I mean, it makes sense because that's your digit. But the digital rectal exam.
It sounds like, well, where's
put the robot in my ass.
Where's the computer guy? Yeah. This is it. Sorry to say that. No, and it is an embarrassing exam. And when the patient goes, doctor, I hate this examination. I say, hey, you have this done once a year. I'm going to do this 40 times today. How about feeling sorry for your poor urologist here? Well, you think this is fun for me? But it's very, very important examination.
I was reading that typical prostate exams, most doctors will go too fast and don't actually take their time to really look for.
Yeah, I talk about this all the time when I do an interview. I mean, how do you do a proper rectal exam? I mean, the key word is gentleness. I mean, first of all, most men find it very, 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 very uncomfortable. So you have to be very, very gentle and very slow, and you have to talk to the patient. And, I know this is unpleasant. You're going to feel a little bit of a pressure. And in order to do a good examination, I mean, it's analogous to doing a breast examination. I mean, if you grab the breast and press down hard, first of all, it's painful. And second of all, you lose the tactile sensation, so you can't feel little bumps, irregularities. So you have to have a very, very kind of a very soft, gentle touch. And it's the same thing with examining a prostate. But, it isn't a pleasant exam.
Now I am turned on. Is that weird?
There are some guys in my practice. They love it. Doctor, when do we go? Or the guy that comes in and said, Dr. Danoff, this year when you do my annual rectal exam, could you use two fingers?
Did someone say that to you?
Why would you use two fingers? Most people find, one finger quite uncomfortable. And the guy says to me, well, doctor, this year I want a second opinion. it's an old urology joke.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Do you, forgive me.
That's okay.
Do you have more urology jokes? I want to hear all the urology jokes.
First of all, urology jokes are endless. And I'll tell you why. Most men, when they come to the urologist, are very uncomfortable. And they want to diffuse the situation. And invariably, all these old guys have not much to do with makeup jokes. Dr. Danoff, did you hear this one? So I've heard every genital joke, every quasi-genital joke, every variation of a general joke. And they all want to make jokes because it makes
patience.
It makes them feel
at home. Sure,
it makes them. It diffuses the situation.
Huh?
It's an embarrassing examination for a man. I mean, women go for their mammograms every year. Women go for their annual Pap smear. Men don't want to go for their PSA. They don't want to have a. They don't want to say they're not macho. I don't have to go to the doctor. I'm fine. I'm going to live forever.
Would you say it's pretty darn important for men to?
Well, certainly over the age of 40, and if you have prostate cancer in your family. Even over 30, we're seeing, prostate cancers in very, very, very young men. And if it's diagnosed in a young man, it will save your life. And if it's not diagnosed, it'll kill you.
So let's talk about penis strength for a minute in terms of erection.
Very strong.
Very strong?
Very strong. End of discussion.
Stronger than it.
Good, Dave.
The Dave is of the wet towel set, you know, where you get an erection and take that big bath towel from the Hilton Hotel, make it soaking wet, and then drape it. And
I don't know this metaphor.
Oh my God, that's
oh, you
the
mean where
the,
yeah, it's yeah, strong enough to hold up the wet towel.
The wet towel without bending, without losing the angle of the dangle.
Man, who are these people? I want to meet these guys.
Yeah, whoa, Superman.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, I've heard of that as a good weight for doing your Kegel exercise. Would you recommend a
Kegel exercises are good. I mean, Kegel, it helps you control ejaculation, prevent premature ejaculation. It's good for urine control. I mean, many men have this great urge to urinate, a couple of cups of coffee, two beers, and you feel like you're going to pee in your pants. And Kegel exercises allow you to strengthen the external sphincter. So, yeah, they're good. I mean, we talk about strength of erection. I mean, strength of erection is really a function of how much blood is getting into the corpus. So let me explain without getting
too complicated.
So the penis basically consists of three channels, one that carries the urine, and two that fill with blood, and those two that fill with blood are called corpus spongiosum. And so as they fill with blood, it's like a sausage casing. So the more blood, the more firm the sausage casing, the firmer the erection, the stronger the erection. So as a man gets older, the blood flow gets less, maybe there's a venous leak, the sausage casing doesn't fill to capacity, so the erection is less firm. It's all a matter of how much blood is getting into the sausage casing.
Okay. So, delicious.
It is very hard for me to not make lewd comments every 5 seconds here. I mean, you got to fill the sausage casing up with blood. I mean, that's...
Well, it's just an analogy. I mean, I realize that.
I'm just saying, she made a comment earlier where I smirked. About 10 seconds.
Sausage?
Yeah. I'm just going to be like,
I got it.
Look, I know I'm 29, but not really.
Delicious.
Anyway, let's talk about filling stuff up with blood.
Well, okay, I've talked to men of all ages about they're worried that they want their penises to be bigger often, and they want to have really strong erections. What are some ways that guys can just ensure that they have, like, can take full advantage of all the volume in their penis and fill that action with blood?
Well, first of all, the size of a man's penis is determined genetically. Mm-hmm. And it's really the size of those two sausage casings. So, you know, they're a certain length and a certain diameter, and that's fixed when you're a little baby and you can't do anything about it. There's no such thing as making your penis larger or phalloplasty. It's the worst thing a man can ever do. It's a bloody disaster.
Which one's phalloplasty?
To make your penis bigger. In other words, some surgical procedures which are out there and promoted, you know, to add girth or add length to your penis, and it is a disaster. So if any of your listeners are even thinking about it, we could think of having a larger penis, maybe, but, you know, it's undoable, so be happy with the one you have. Make it your friend. So to get maximum filling of the sausage casing, to get maximum erection both in length and in girth, first, the excitation is one thing. You know, we can't do anything about a venous leak except maybe Viagra. There's no real surgical procedure for that, so we want to get the blood in. Mm-hmm. And then we want to keep the blood in, sort of like moving a boat through the Panama Canal, you know, through the locks. The locks fill up with water, then the gate closes behind, and we move the boat to the higher level. And it's exactly the same with the penis. We want the arterial blood to get in, and then the lock closes, and it stays there for the duration of intercourse.
Mm-hmm. I have so many questions. I can't even, like, the things you just said, like 10 different questions came to me. Okay, so guys who get really strong hard-ons and then start losing it, and then they come to you, how often is it mainly emotional or psychological and not actually a physical issue?
Well, in the younger guys, it's overwhelmingly psychological. In the older guys, it's physical. Over 50.
Okay.
Diminished blood flow, more likely to have arteriosclerotic changes, more likely to have a venous leak. younger guys, you know, healthy all the way. It's 99% between the ears and 1% between the legs. It's all psychological. I talk about that a lot in my book.
Yeah, I really enjoyed some of the stuff that you wrote about
that. Try to put it in perspective.
Yeah.
But
It's just much funner asking. Funner? Is that a word? It's, fun. It's much more fun asking you than...
all right.
You know, so.
What kind of psychological issues can make you have trouble getting an erection?
Well, the biggest is self-doubt.
Sure.
Performance anxiety. I mean, that's the biggest one. I mean, is my partner going to think I'm adequate? Is my partner going to think my penis is big enough? Is my partner going to be satisfied that I don't ejaculate too quickly? Is my, you know, it's performance anxiety is by far and away the biggest. I mean, you got to believe in yourself. This is, hey, got to look it down at that baby in the morning, scrub it, rub it, put a little, you know, cologne on it. You're my best buddy. You and I are in this together today.
Okay, so you're supposed to scrub it.
Scrub it, rub it, and talk sweetly to it.
Put cologne on it? What kind of cologne are we talking?
Well, I don't, you know, cologne of your preference.
Okay. It seems like that might not be best for lubrication.
No. This is purely cosmetic.
I know.
Be friendly. Yeah. Put lipstick on it.
Lipstick on it. Yeah. That'll make her want to sleep.
And then, I mean, it's so psychological. You know, what goes on between closed doors and what turns a penis on? You know, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a urologist, I'm a mainstream, very mainstream guy. And I say, hey, you know the difference between sex and wrestling?
Huh. You know, I want to know.
I say it in a book. In wrestling, there are some holds that are barred. You know, in sex, you know, anything goes, you know, as long as you don't hurt somebody. Mm-hmm. Do something that's hurtful to yourself.
So double Nelsons are totally fine in the sack.
Double Nelsons on a penis are perfectly all right. The stranglehold.
Okay. Sorry, I just mimicked that. Okay, never mind. Okay, so I have questions for you. What about penis pumps?
Well, a penis pump?
Yes.
Well, I mean, when men are having difficulty getting erections, there are a number of things that we do. Injection therapy, you know, the pills, Viagra, Cialis, Levitra. And amongst the things that we use, we call them VEDs, vacuum erectile devices, or you call it a penis pump. So it creates what we call a negative filling pressure, negative. So you get passive venous filling, and then you put a ring or a constricting ring. Sometimes they call it a cock ring or a rubber band around the base of the penis. So I don't think it's for the younger guys. I think it's for the older guys that have, you know, vascular problems and venous leaks. I think younger guys using it could be very, very dangerous, because if you have an erection, you know, that lasts longer than 4 hours, as the advertisement says, you know, call everybody you know. But I mean, the reality is it's not good, because the blood can thicken and sludge, and then you get something called priapism, which is an erection that won't quit, which
that's
hard to believe.
Incredibly
but it's not,
dangerous.
Not fun.
Sure, that sounds awful.
That's generally from taking drugs, though, like Viagra.
Drugs or using some sort of a constricting device.
And you can have permanent...
Or injection. You know, a lot of guys using what we call injection therapy. There's what we call a vasoactive substance called prostaglandin E1, and you could actually inject that into the side of the penis, and it's a very potent vasodilator, makes the vessels dilate, and blood rushes to the penis.
Oh, is that how it works?
Oh, man, yeah, and in older men, it's very, very, very effective treatment, and you all hear the advertisements for the Boston Clinic, where they say, you know, come in, one visit, and you'll walk out, you know, and have... It's all about injections. Anybody who walks in the door gets an injection of this vasoactive substance.
What if someone's not actually having a physical problem?
They shouldn't be doing it,
because
it can be very, very dangerous.
I mean, no penis pumps, people can like bruise themselves and whatnot.
I think a lot of people think of them as a way to make your penis longer.
I have talked to people who have said that they will pump every day and their penis is bigger.
Well, you know, maybe they're stretching the ligaments, so it appears to be bigger, but it's you can't make the sausage case bigger. You just can't.
Why not?
Well, if you could,
can you make your arm longer? Is it that type of thing?
Sort of like that, you know. Oh, and if I could, I'd work about 2 days a year, and then I'd have this island in Tahiti, you know, surrounded.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That would be
every man's dream. But the reality is, there is no legitimate surgical way to do it. And I pity anybody that tries. Mm-hmm. The most unhappy people I've seen in my practice are those who have had phalloplasty, some surgical mm-hmm. attempt to make it bigger or wider or fatter. So I always tell my audience when they ask me, I said, I've seen more penises than can fill the Rose Bowl, probably mm-hmm. two Rose Bowls. And I've seen a lot of the partners, the women attached to those penises. And I've never heard one woman ever say to me, Dr. Dadoff, can you make my partner's penis longer, fatter, wider?
Mm-hmm.
I have asked them, or they've asked me, can you make it a little firmer?
Mm-hmm.
And attach it to a nicer, a sweeter guy. But length is not as good as a Black American Express card. I can tell you that.
Mm. And honestly, firmness, being a female, friend of the penis, I would definitely say that hardness is really. I mean, because it's also very validating. But of course. We've talked about this on the show before about that, but it's totally fine if someone's having erectile issues and they're not quite as hard, because you kind of just assume they're just freaking out for whatever reason.
Freaking out, or they're not attracted to you, or maybe they had something with a girl earlier in the afternoon and you're getting the leftovers. So a really good, firm...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Never even occurred to me that would pop into a girl's head.
What am I, like, third?
Yeah.
God.
Third to man. But who knew?
You're such a stud. That's the voice in my never mind. What about healthy lifestyle? Like, what can people do? Okay, Kegel exercises for just encouraging blood flow to the penis. I mean, exercise. I mean, what are things that people can just encourage penis health?
All the things that encourage cardiovascular health. Low fat diet, high protein, weight control, calorie control. All of those things, cardiovascular fitness, physical fitness. I mean, if you think about making love, it's a little like, doing push-ups. So upper body strength, leg strength, good cardiovascular fitness, all of those things go to penis health. And when you think about a guy who's got, a 40-inch waist and he looks down and he's got this big belly and then he's got this little penis sort of hiding behind, he's got coming through about 3 inches of fat. The guy looks down and he says, what happened to my penis? Where's my short? And he doesn't have a short little penis. He's just got all this prepubic fat. And mm-hmm. It looks like he's got a short penis. The guy loses about 40 pounds, looks in the mirror. Hey, wow, what a big penis I have. What happened? I'm a big macho guy. So cardiovascular fitness, general fitness, weight control, all the things that we say breed good health, bring penis power, mm-hmm. without a doubt.
I remember I went to a conference recently and I found out that if you, the first signs of you possibly having a heart attack down the road is erectile dysfunction.
Absolutely.
Or weakness of...
Cardio, sure, you could have arteriosclerosis, decreased blood flow to your penis, decreased blood flow to your coronary mm-hmm. arteries, diabetes mellitus, the same thing, small little vessels.
Because they're so tiny in the penis, the little vessels.
Yeah.
They're really sensitive, they'll tell you.
So there's a lot of things that if you're not getting a good erection, maybe a tip off that something else is going on.
Okay. Cock rings.
Well, it's a constricting ring. So, you can use it, but you have to use it judiciously. Because especially in young guys, what you do is you fill up the penis with blood and then you don't allow venous drainage. Well, that's okay for a limited period of time, but if you do it for hours, you run the really risk of having this sludge and getting this priapism.
Yeah. We'll recommend 20 minutes, 30 minutes at the most.
That's okay. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Sure, okay with that.
Is that about what you would say?
Check my sources. Personal experience, it's okay.
Okay.
TMI.
Yeah. There's very... Can you even TMI on this show?
Too much information.
No. We know what that is, but I don't even know if it's possible on this show.
I don't think it is.
I don't know. We've told some things about ourselves.
We started talking about religion. I'd be like, TMI.
Let's see. Okay, premature ejaculation. Oh my God, 2 minutes in. I ejaculated. I didn't even get it even near any orifice yet, and I came, or, you know.
Been there. Right, guys?
Okay. Absolutely. All of us. Well, again, it's inversely proportional to the frequency with which you ejaculate. So, especially in young men who can ejaculate 5-6 times, you know, a day.
Hell yeah.
The first time, it's going to be the so-called inevitability is going to be really, really quick. And one of the cures, particularly if you're, you know, in an early dating situation or you're having a problem with premature ejaculation, just masturbate before you have relationship with your girlfriend, and that'll definitely slow things down.
Okay.
And as a guy gets older, he says, you know, it takes me all night now to do what I used to do all night long. So it's inversely proportional to age. Mm-hmm. It's inversely proportional to the frequency with which you ejaculate. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are exercises, and I talk a little bit about it, that in the book, Squeeze Me, Please Me, a Valsalva maneuver, take a breath, you know.
Wait,
what are those?
Yeah, share. Well, I didn't even get to that chapter.
Oh,
so.
Okay. There you go. So, I mean, there are many, many, many tricks to prevent premature ejaculation. So once you reach the so-called point of inevitability, that's just before your climax, if you go over that threshold, there's no turning back. It's purely a reflex. You can't do anything about it. So mm-hmm. So the trick is to try to desensitize yourself before you reach that point of inevitability. Mm-hmm. So one of the things is withdrawal, mm-hmm. and then sort of take your thumb and your finger and squeeze the head of your penis as hard as you can without
it. The actual head. Whoa. Or right behind the head?
No, right, the actual head. With, you know,
squish it.
Or you could have your partner do the same, but, you know, probably you. So that sort of desensitizes.
Above and below the
meatus?
Yeah,
just right on. No, yeah, right on the glands, the head of the penis.
So this is my penis. I'm just like.
Yeah. Right over the hole? Like squeeze it?
No, squeeze the glands. You know,
the squishy.
You know, the head of the penis. And, sure. And that desensitizes. So that's one way. Another way is you got to slow down and then do a Valsalva maneuver. Valsalva maneuver is it's bearing down, sort of increasing your abdominal pressure. It's like sort of
like when
you're trying to move your bowels, but don't move your bowels. It's that, you know, that pressure. Yeah. So that increases intra-abdominal pressure.
Okay.
And that slows it down. And then it's just a lot of exercises. If you have a partner that you can trust, you know, you want to withdraw and you want to slow things down, and you know, so there are lots of exercises, but mostly it's about frequency with which you ejaculate at age. So a lot of sex, less premature ejaculation. The older you get, less premature ejaculation.
Oh my God.
It's actually too bad that that's the way that metric goes. Because if there's anyone that's going to get upset about premature ejaculation, it's an 18-year-old kid. You know what I mean? Like, when it would happen to me when I was 18, I'd be like, I am a failure.
Yeah, right.
I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about performance anxiety, and the young guys, you know, they're so, you know, nervous about this getting it on, you know, before they get their zipper out, so squirting all over the place. So
yeah.
that masturbation before you do it, it's very, very helpful. All right? Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that.
Totally.
Masturbation is helpful.
Mm. Yes.
Remember that, especially if you're a parent.
Oh, man.
Also, the term that you used, point of inevitability, is a term that I'm going to use in bed now.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
I'm at the point of inevitability.
Hang on.
I'm at the point of inevitability.
Hang on. There's nothing I can do about it now.
It's inevitable.
It's inevitable. Very good.
Oh, man.
Orgasm without ejaculation, which some people, like in tantric behavior, totally are like, I want to have an orgasm, but I don't want to actually ejaculate. What?
No, I'm just not familiar physiologically mm-hmm. with how that's possible. I know that in older men mm-hmm. or in men that have had prostate cancer and have had their prostates removed, mm-hmm. you can have orgasm mm-hmm. without any fluid coming out, mostly because the prostate and the seminal vesicles are gone. And in the older men, you know, the prostate just doesn't produce any juice. So they can have an orgasm, the sensation mm-hmm. of orgasm, perineal contractions, and what we perceive as an orgasm without any fluid coming out. But I don't know of any method. I mean, not that I know of. Now, maybe there's something in India that I am not I didn't travel to the Himalayas to speak to the guru, but maybe I'm going to go there and find out. You know, where you can have a seminal vesicle filled with semen and have an orgasm, as we describe an orgasm, without that fluid coming out. Mm-hmm. Now, there may be another sensation that tantric exercises calls, quote, orgasmic, but an orgasm, as we understand it in urology and in medicine, is not possible without the ejaculation of fluid.
Okay.
Or the emission of fluid. It's just not possible.
Okay.
So, but if there is, I'll let the guy come to my office and in his turban and show me how.
Well, thank you for clarifying, because when I read that in the book, I was like, older men don't ejaculate but have orgasm. I was thinking it was that magical separation. I'm like, I don't understand.
No, it's just that, that there's just no fluid. It's okay.
I wrote, can you last longer by abstaining? And I'm like,
no,
it's quite the
opposite. Because as the seminal vesicles are filled, the point of inevitability, the point when you ejaculate, is much closer. Now, if you've abstained for a long time, maybe the refractory period will be shorter. So if you talk about that as sustainability, so man ejaculates, but has abstained for a very long time. He still has a lot of fluid left in his seminal vesicle.
He's ready to go.
He's ready
right away.
Ready to go again. So in that way, abstinence will maybe prolong it, but not the point of inevitability. Right. So it's kind of like a mixed bag.
I will say that sometimes when I haven't gotten laid for a while, my level of anxiety about sex raises. So that's a way to make it last longer. If you want to just, be super paranoid, just be a real paranoid guy, you can last longer in bed.
I mean, it's so psychological. Sure. It's so much between the ears. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like this is just Ask Dr. Danoff hour. Like, I'm excited. Well, it is, but it's just... That's
exactly what it is.
This is fun.
Well, I don't have all the answers, but I don't know.
Oh, I disagree, Dr. Danoff.
I don't know anybody that's seen what penises that I have.
Well, yeah, what are
I know
patients?
Some guys.
Over in West Hollywood.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I know those guys as well, but they haven't seen as many as Phil the Rose Bowl. I've been doing this for almost 40 years.
Oh, fair enough.
Why do people come to you, and what do they usually ask for? Like, what is the top three things that you're like always seeing?
Well, most come for prostate examination, but people come because they're having erectile dysfunction, and urinary tract infection. They might have blood in their urine. They might have pain when they urinate. They might have pain in their side, perceived though their kidney, inability to urinate.
Has anyone ever asked you for a new penis? Like, I know people want a bigger one sometimes, but has someone ever said, doctor, I want a different penis. Can we get me a different one?
Well, I don't think they've ever framed it quite that way. There are a lot of guys that come in that are sadly disappointed with their equipment. And I think it's my job to be realistic and say, hey, buddy, you're stuck with it. There's not much we could do about it. You got to love it. It's yours. Because there really isn't much you could do to change a penis.
You could paint it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You could certainly circumcise it, and you could. Oh, absolutely. I mean, so that might be something. A man who has an uncircumcised penis and what we call a non-retractable foreskin, foreskin that doesn't retract over the glands, the tip of the penis. Okay, so that's unhealthy and it's unsightly and it's probably not very satisfactory in sex. So, in that way, we could sort of give it a new look. Dress it up a bit,
Get it some new...
Can you add an inch on while you're down there, Doc? I mean,
do you ever do a partial circumcision, where just like you take a little?
Well, that would be that's unsightly. Mm-hmm. But in an older man, has many other problems, and has what we call a non-retractable foreskin. We would do something called a dorsal slit, so it would allow the penis to retract. But it would. I mean, the guy is so old; he doesn't use it anyway. He's got 15 other diseases, so it's. Technically, we can do it, but cosmetically, we wouldn't do it.
Okay. You next. You go, Dave.
Vasectomies. We do vasectomies, and guys, a clip and a snip.
Is that an easy thing to do?
Very. done in the
really?
Office.
Yeah.
No scalpel. Takes about 10 minutes.
No scalpel? Yeah. What?
You do it in the office?
What?
Yeah, I make a little nick in the scrotum, and the vas deferens is like a piece of number 10 linguine, and we tie it and cut it and snip it.
This does not sound easy.
Yeah. Doesn't make your hair fall out. Doesn't make you have less of an erection. It's a very effective method of birth control. So,
tell you what, I got 10 minutes.
here you go.
But can you do it where it's reversible?
It is reversible. I mean, to reverse it is a little bit more difficult than to do it, but it's definitely reversible.
Interesting.
Do it all the time. I mean, I have patients had a vasectomy.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got divorced from his wife. He got remarried to a younger woman. Came in, he said, you know, doctor, I'd like you to put it back together again. It's called a vasostomy. It's a long word, but it means you just reattach the vas deferens.
Is it just as simple?
It's a little bit more difficult. It requires a little anesthesia and takes about 45 minutes to do it. You have to do it with a microscope and very fine suture material, but it's not difficult to do it. So then he made his second wife, you know, pregnant and two children. Now he was ready to have a second vasectomy. So he had a vasectomy, a vasostomy, and a vasectomy. So I've had that happen a few times in
my career. Is that something that HMOs tend to cover, like getting
vasectomies? Well, again, you know, insurances are variable, and some insurances do cover vasectomies. I don't know any insurance that would cover a vasostomy. So, you know, you got a vasectomy, buddy. Now you're stuck with it. So you want to get it back together, and you have to pay for it. So some insurances, you know, do, and some insurances don't. So I'm no expert on insurance. They're very, they're very hard to figure out.
They can be very complicated.
They're very complicated.
How much does one of those cost?
It costs, I think, around $1,500.
A vasectomy?
A vasectomy.
And how much would a vasovasostomy
probably be three times that.
Really?
Whoa.
Three times harder to do. Mm-hmm. And then you have the extra added cost of anesthesia and an operating room.
Right.
So that would be a cost to the patient.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I feel like I'm like, oh, what's that? Sign me up. What? No.
Sign my guy up. I've had enough.
No, it's interesting to know, because people often don't know what options they have in terms of birth control. And especially because, I mean, there are men who sleep with women who have a lot of anxiety around getting someone pregnant before they're ready to be a father.
Without any question. But, I mean, if a man is not married and he's kind of sleeping around, I think a vasectomy is a pretty radical way to allay your anxiety, because if you want to get married someday and have children, then you're a little bit behind the eight ball. So I wouldn't get a preemptive vasectomy. And then when I got married, go to the doctor and spend another, $4,000 or $5,000 to get it put back together again. That just doesn't make any sense. So I think you're stuck, with condom, withdrawal, prayer, who knows what.
Prayer. Has prayer been shown to work?
Prayer is,
I should pray.
The rhythm, that's, isn't that, the rhythm, that's prayer.
I was going to ask, when it comes to, I mean, because so many people are on antidepressants, allergy meds, or Propecia. I was just talking to someone whose partner's on Propecia, and just really downgrades desire, and also
absolutely. All of those things affect erections. They reflect blood flow. They affect reflex. They affect nerve conduction. So all of those things will definitely impact negatively on getting a good erection.
Is there anything people can do if they can't? Now, of course, I think it's really healthy to be able to talk to your doctor and be like, is there any other alternate medication that doesn't?
Everybody reacts to their medications differently. And there are some medications that are profound. I mean, for example, antihypertensive drugs, which lower blood pressure, also lower blood flow. So, the patients say, oh, God, I got a new antihypertensive drug from my physician, and I'm really having a lot of trouble with erections. And I say, look, Harry, don't stop taking it and get a stroke to get a heart on. That's that's absurd.
Bad trade.
Talk to your doctor. See if there's another alternative, a drug that you can work with that'll, get your blood pressure down and still get an erection.
What is the actual, why? Why? What does a hypertensive do to reduce it? I mean, because I figure your blood's still flowing through your body. What's going on that you can't get a heart on as easily?
Well, antihypertensive medicines basically lower blood pressure. And sometimes when a man has hardening of the arteries, he needs a high pressure it's sort of a pump to get the blood into his penis. You lower the blood pressure, he's got narrowed or compromised arterial flow, and there's just not enough blood mm-hmm. flowing to his penis. So that's the mechanism why a lot of anti-high blood pressure medications are adverse to penis power.
Oh, man. It's important. What about smoking?
Well, smoking nicotine is a very, very potent vasoconstrictor. Means it narrows the blood vessels. So, you know,
so it's harder to
smoking
bring
the blood
and
in. Penis power do not go in the same pouch.
So that is something real, because you kind of see that, like with the PSAs, we're like, yeah, but yeah. It.
Well, I mean, look, I don't think that you're going to smoke a cigarette and your penis is going to go down, but theoretically, right. The overall effect is absolutely negative.
Okay.
Smoking and penis power don't go together.
Okay. More power to the penis.
More power to the penis.
Hmm.
Long
pump.
Long live, yes.
Did you say fist pump?
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, put my fist up in the air.
Yeah.
Penis power.
How can I make my fist bigger?
Yeah, oh, there you go.
I'm still thinking about arm pumps, like just a giant vacuum chamber for one arm to see if pumping it over time would make it. Who would
I think that's
that?
Like a way to kill yourself. That's how you die. It's at least how they used to kill people in the medieval era.
Sounds
like they would just rack you.
Just a light vacuum that you leave your arm in for like 15 to 20 minutes, because that's what we'll, guys
will
do. It'll
probably cool down your arm. It'd be cooler
but
on
you
your arm.
It starts sucking the blood into your arm, so your arm just becomes...
Well, maybe you get like a just sort of like a pulsing sphere of skin and blood at the end of your hand. Maybe that's possible.
My fingertips get all weird looking.
Yeah, and then you die.
And then it turns black and falls off.
No, my dream.
Oh,
man.
Penises.
It's inevitable.
Cock rings, but behind or in front of the balls, does it matter?
It really doesn't matter. It's any way that's comfortable, that constricts the outflow of blood is okay. So I have no personal preference.
we'll argue about this in the sex...
Say
pleasure,
that again?
In the pleasure and sex community, like, we'll totally argue about, like, honor behind the balls. And some people are like, well, you have to go behind the balls because of this... I mean, the balls kind of keep it from slipping forward
and
stuff.
I would say that's probably a more aesthetically pleasing and easier way to do it. But I'm no expert in that.
Yeah.
Huh?
It's just interesting.
I'm expert
at
an
argument.
Expert in a lot of things, but
no, it's okay.
Yeah.
Are there any new developments in the urology field that you're particularly excited about in terms of penis functioning?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of talk about one of the drug companies coming out with a male contraceptive, either in a pill form or a gel or a spray form.
That's interesting.
Very exciting for penis power. I mean, if we could get, you know, men who don't have to wear a condom or don't have to withdraw, or the rhythm system takes a lot of anxiety out of lovemaking, and that adds to penis power. So I think that's a very... exciting thing. I mean, I just
takes pressure off women too.
I just wrote a blog on my website, which is called penispowerbook.com. You could go there, about vasectomy, right today being the only legitimate method of birth control, other than the others, which are highly unsatisfactory. So that's, you know, that's very, very, very exciting. You know, in terms of implants and rings and medications, I don't see much on the horizon. Injectables, this so-called prostaglandin E1 that I spoke about earlier in the program, you know, that's very, very effective in marginal guys, not in young guys that want to, you know, make it better, but in guys that don't function very well. And, of course, the drugs, you know, Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, again, in the younger guys that are having good erections, I am really cautious about it because it can give you a prolonged erection, which can be really dangerous. I mean, a little bit longer is fine. You know, a lot longer, I think, is a little risky.
Oh, my God. I have so many questions.
I tend to be risk averse.
Dave, do you have any questions? Because I've been asking a lot of questions.
I can't think of one right now.
I mean, you
I've
have
also
one.
Been asking. I have a question.
Oh, that's no, true. No, no,
a huge one.
You have a huge
question.
Oh my God!
Oh my God! It's so big.
I can see it.
It's the biggest one I've ever seen. It's the best. You're the best. How music to a man's ears.
How big is the biggest penis you've ever seen?
pretty big.
Pretty big. Are we talking? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, how big?
I would say in the erect state, about 12 inches, about a foot.
That's a lot of. That's a lot of penis.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be very upset if I had to have sex with.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I would be very upset if I had to deal with that.
You know, if you watch, you know, the porno films where everything is, you know, magnified and turned backwards and upside down, and lighting and music. I mean, you get the illusion that every man has, you know, the biggest dick in the world. But all of that is so.
Speaking of which, I have a question.
Sir.
This is a while ago, too, and I watched this porn scene a few years ago that bothered me so much. Like, because, you know, there's like a certain shot in porn that is not attractive or turned on to me at all, and that is when it's just sort of like all of the genitals mashing together, and there's like no faces or other body parts. It's just like squish, 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 and I'm like not, I'm like, ugh. But there's this one that I saw I couldn't take my eyes off of because the guy had a snake tattooed along the bottom of his penis.
Uh-huh.
And it like coiled where the balls were. So the bottom of the balls and the entire bottom of the shaft of the penis was tattooed. And I was just watching, like enthralled, like, ah, like why did he do that to himself?
What a great snake.
Wow, yeah, that snake's having a great time. What effect does that have on... I mean, everything that is involved in your penis, like having an orgasm, becoming erect, getting a tattoo, like can... I would think that would sort of desensitize the penis.
I'm not sure a tattoo, you know,
really?
Would. A lot of guys put a ring through the meatus. I don't think that's such a great idea. That might desensitize it.
I mean, that's called
Prince Albert.
Yeah, so-called Prince Albert.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a really good idea, and I've seen a lot of problems with that.
Oh, although they get infected or what happens?
Yeah, they do. Or they erode, or the ring just erodes through, and then you sort of get a kind of a big groove. I must say, over the last few years, the popularity of, quote, Prince Albert, you know, piercing is definitely diminished.
Oh, really?
That's good.
Yeah, that I've seen, which I think is really, really good. As far as a tattoo on the surface of your penis, I mean, there's an old joke about that. You know, welcome to Jamaica, man. You know that old...
No.
No, I have no idea. What?
You know, somebody goes to the, you know, the men's room, and he looks over and he sees this guy, and it says sort of like JMN, and he says, "Wait, where are you? JMN tattooed on your penis?" And it's, the other guy says, "No, that doesn't say JMN.
Oh.
It says, you're welcome to Jamaica, man." You should see it. So it's a very
well. Then let me ask you this: would you you would have to be erect to get something tattooed on your penis? Then, right? Or would you like be a series of like folding things back?
Yeah, well, right. we'll have a little bit. The guy would have to work pretty quickly to get the full tattoo on.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure how that would work exactly, but I have not seen. Many guys with tattoos on their penis, on the shaft of their penis. You know, I certainly have seen suprapubic, you know, in the pubic area, in the perineal area. Tattoos, but not on the shaft
like
of the
around
penis.
The base of the
penis.
Yeah.
There's one that's like a dragon where like around the shaft, base, there's like wings, and then the penis is a dragon.
There you go. The head of the dragon.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. I mean, terrible. I mean, weird. That's so cool. Morning wood.
Love it.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, it's a physiologic reaction.
Mm-hmm.
With the bladder full, urinary bladder full, what happens is this compression on the venous outflow from the penis. So a man usually at night will get an involuntary erection, maybe he'll get three or four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the early morning erection he's got when he's sleeping, and then the pressure of the full bladder squeezing down on the veins and not allowing drainage results in morning wood. That's one of the tests we have. We call it NPT, nocturnal penile tumescence. Every man, I mean, from, you know, newborn to old age, if he's capable physiologically, meaning he has vascular structures intact, neurologic, endocrine, everything is intact, we'll get two or three erections at night while he's asleep. So you can measure that.
Hell yeah.
And then you take away the psychological factors. So if the guys really can't get an erection during the day, anxiety, you put on this little meter at night, you see he's getting an erection at night, you say, hey, there's nothing wrong with you. You're getting good erections at night. It's just, it's up there between your ears. So, but that's the explanation for morning wood.
I feel much better now that I know that.
Yeah.
Were you feeling bad about morning wood before?
No. I think it's just not really having the explanation to tell people. Because people ask me stuff all the time. I don't know everything. I mean, I know some
now
stuff.
You do. Now you
know everything.
Well, there's a whole chapter in my book that I said, I want every woman to be a penis professor. Know everything there is about the penis in her life.
That is a tall order, though.
Well, I do my best.
Fair enough.
But there's a lot of mysticism and misunderstandings about, you know, male genitals, especially for people who like to sleep with men. It's just...
Yeah, it's definitely a mystery, you know, wrapped in an enigma. You know, where it works, why it works, how it works is a mystery. And I think it's incumbent on a woman, or if a man has a man partner, it's incumbent on the partner to figure out what makes my partner's penis work, where, when, how. I mean, that's all in the book. I mean, that's your job.
Yeah, totally.
And the more successful you are at doing that, the more successful your relationship will be. And that's not in any way against women or disrespectful. It's just a fact of life, you know. I'm hard when I'm soft, and I'm soft when I'm hard.
So,
ask me for the diamond ring, you know, before you poke it in, not after.
Wait, what?
Well, I mean, a man with an erection is much more pliable than a man who's been satiated. Uh-huh. So... Every smart
woman
knows that. My goodness, that's penis 101.
Oh my God, like your dick's so hard. I'm having such a good time. You're so hot. Yeah. You want to meet my parents? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. When can I get? Can I sleep over anytime?
Okay, last question. I swear. Plus, we're running out of time. But semen, ejaculate, all that lovely fluid. Is there nutritional content or hormones in it that feel really good to absorb in the other person receiving? So nutritional content and hormone exchange.
Good. It's a good question. So I don't personally think there's anything harmful in it. So let me say with a great deal of positivity, there's nothing harmful in it. Theoretically, there is a nutrient that allows the sperm to move these little tadpoles, swimmers. Mm-hmm. So there is theoretically a nutrient in it. I think the amount of nutrient is so minuscule that it's, you know, its impact on somebody swallowing sperm, swallowing semen wouldn't mean anything. So I would say overall it's probably not nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly not harmful.
Okay.
In any way, you know, whatsoever.
Excellent.
But I would hardly call it nutritious.
Okay.
Or a bodybuilder.
Cool. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
No. Dr. Danoff, thank you so much.
Well, my pleasure, Sandra. This has been fun for me. I hope your audience enjoyed it and learned something.
Awesome. Where can people, again, I know you mentioned your website earlier, your website, how people can buy Penis Power, if they have questions for you or want to come see you.
Well, it's very kind of you to ask. So Penis Power, the ultimate guide to male sexual health on Amazon.com. It's ebook. You can go to my website, penispowerbook.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, so I'm in the phone book, listed loud and clear. You can call my office, make an appointment. I'm busy, but I always have time to talk to a patient, even if it's 8 o'clock at night when I'm through with everything. So I welcome calls. And
wow, that's great.
Promo code SEXNERD, you can get a hug. No, I was just making that up.
What?
I'm all like, what? What have you?
I was hoping when we were finished that I would get the hug.
Oh no, you can do. No, it was because when we do like ads and stuff, we'll be like promo code sex nerd. But I was like, oh, what kind of? Anyway, never mind.
So if you go in to Dr. Danoff to get a vasectomy and you say sex nerd, then he will hug you.
That's
after your vasectomy.
15% discount.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for entertaining the nerdiness that is the questions.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Awesome.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.